I'm Grace, the Amy Santiago of Royal Bloggers.
And I'm Jessica, the Dorothy Sporina of Royal Bloggers.
And we'd like to welcome you to On Air, the podcast where two cynical Brits discuss the latest royal news and the truth behind the stories. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the On Air podcast. A few things have been happening over the past sort of month or so. That are all linked sort of under the topic of sport, because the summer is a very sporty time of year and there's always different sporting events going on. So we thought we would look at some different sporting events and the sort of royals that get involved with them and whether we think they do a good job of representing them, and then look at some of the actual royals themselves who have had their own sort of sporting careers later on.
Yes. Yeah. So I think it was mostly inspired by a lot of the conversation around Prince William and his participation at the Euros, which we will get onto at a later date. I mean, it was my idea to make the whole episode about sports, but I also hate that it was my idea to make the whole episode about sports because I don't like sport, except from Wimbledon and gymnastics. I'm not really interested in sports at all, and I don't know anything about them. And I resent that the royals are making us talk about it at length. But I think we were going to start off by talking positively.
Yeah, we were going to do some happy things. We like to be positive occasionally.
No one would know that. But yes, so we're going to start off by talking about some of the royals who've done quite a good job over the past few weeks of their sporting participation. So one of the big sporting events that's happened over the last few weeks is the Tour de France, which is cycling. I know that. They held some of the race this year in Denmark, and so that's where it started off, and then it kind of ended in Paris. And so obviously, because it was taking place in Denmark, the Danish royal family were involved. And so one of the things that I really liked was that it started off, their coverage of it started off before the Tour de France even began. So obviously they knew in advance that it was going to happen in Denmark. It wasn't like the day before the Tour de France was like, hey, we should go to Copenhagen. And so even before the event had kicked off, Crown Prince Frederick had met with the riders. He had gone to their official team presentation. And then he was kind of there continuously throughout. So like, he was there for the first day when it all started. He handed over the yellow jersey on the first day. I think that means the leader, the winner. The front runner?
The fastest one, maybe?
Fastest one. They have all sorts of colours that they wear, and the yellow one is a big one. I don't know. I think that was one of the things that stood out to me, is that it felt very much like they knew this was coming, so they planned in advance. It wasn't just sort of like, this is happening. We should, maybe one of us should go along for 10 minutes or something.
Kind of what made it so good, sort of building on that, is the fact that even though it very much felt like Frederick was the driving force, he wasn't the only person involved. Crown Princess Mary and their children were there to watch the sort of beginning of the race in Copenhagen. Princess Marie and her husband, Mr. Marie, and their children were in fact, they live in France, so they watched some of the race in France during the, I don't know how long the race goes on for, like a couple of weeks maybe, I don't know. And then even at one point, the Danish court released a picture of Queen Margarita and her sisters, so Princess Benedict and Queen Anne Marie of Greece, watching the Tour de France. Like, Queen Margarita might have just put that on, they took a picture and turned it off again, but it felt like the whole family were embracing the Tour de France because it had started in Copenhagen, and it was this year, it had this kind of Danish sort of edge to it, and the eventual winner was Danish, so they kind of just went all out and celebrated, and it seemed to just work really, really well as a unit.
I wouldn't have minded if it had just been Frederick, because he, you know, if he'd put enough effort into it, he could have done it all by himself and that would have been fine. But I think that, you know, one of the reasons that the coverage of this event felt so good was definitely because they had like everybody involved. And I thought it was a good opportunity to use that connection between France and Denmark, because Marie and Mr. Marie have been criticized quite a lot for leaving Denmark and going to France. And then they gave an interview, which we've talked about in previous episodes, where they kind of said, well, it wasn't really our choice. We didn't want to go, but we kind of were forced to. One of the challenges has been kind of, how do they sort of keep the Danish people happy when they physically don't live in that country anymore. And this is a really good way of being able to do that, because they didn't have to go back to Denmark, but it was kind of like, oh, Frederick started it off in Denmark, so the Danish contingent who live in France can kind of pick it up and, you know, pick up the baton, so to speak. And yeah, once it kind of became clear that the champion would probably be Danish, Frederick also went down to Paris and joined them for the end of it, to kind of award things. But he probably wouldn't have gone to Paris if the winner wasn't going to be Danish, but he'd still been heavily involved when the event was in Denmark. So it wasn't like it was just like, oh wow, actually we're doing okay, maybe one of us should go. It was like, I've done my thing, but we're doing better, so I'll do an extra thing on top.
Like I remember in 2014 when the Tour de France started in Yorkshire, Harry, Kate and Will were up there and they waved it all off and everyone was like, oh, that's lovely. And he could have just done that. He could have waved them off at the start and it would have been enough, because he's not like the Tour de France mascot, but he's because it started in Copenhagen, he really was like, you know what, I'm gonna, for this year, don't know if he's gonna do it again, but this is his Tour de France year. And he just went all out and just wasn't, I mean, he cycled part of the route. I mean, that's just weird personally, but you do you, Frederick.
I think what you mentioned about the cycling the route, this is what made it so strong. Cause like I hadn't really been following any of this, and I wouldn't have followed it if it wasn't for this podcast, to be honest, because I'm not interested in cycling. But once I started looking into it, it just felt so coherent that like they obviously had a really good social media plan in the background of this. The social media started before the event. So like the Royal Instagram accounts shared a video that had a compilation of sort of pictures and videos of royals from history cycling. Then they shared a video of Frederick cycling some of the route and kind of like testing it out, I suppose. I know he is a cyclist, he does like cycling, but and then yes, the picture of Margrethe. There was also another picture of Frederick who was watching from the boat that the Danish royal family have. Again, it would have been fine if he'd just gone to all of the engagements and they posted a picture afterwards. But it felt really coherent, you know, which I think is a difference between some other royal families.
And the other kind of big sporting event that has already happened and always has quite a good sort of royal attendance is Wimbledon, which is obviously tennis. There's quite a few similarities between the way the Danish royal family approach the Tour de France and the way the British royal family approach Wimbledon, in the way that it's not a one person sort of sport. Like there's always a lot of them there. So you would obviously normally get the Cambridges, the Wessexes, Gloucesters, the Kents, as well as the sort of extended members of the royal family. And they don't only go to the final. They tend to spread themselves out. So you get a couple in that first week, and more as it goes through to the final when you get the big ones. And Wimbledon is slightly different from the Tour de France because it does have royal connections, with the Duke of Kent being the president of Wimbledon, or the All England Lawn Tennis Association, until last year, and the Duchess of Cambridge being the patron. So for them, it is more of a job than this kind of like Danish passion that's erupted this year for cycling. However, it doesn't feel, and it never felt, that for Catherine or for the Duke of Kent, that it was almost like, oh, they'd better go to Wimbledon because it's a job.
Yeah.
Like Kate in particular, we saw her go quite a bit before she was the patron. And they all, the people like Kate and Duke of Kent go more than once. So they don't just turn up, do their job and go home. They'll go earlier on, they'll go towards the end, they'll go to some of the outer court matches, they'll meet with the people, the sort of hidden heroes behind the scenes, which kind of thinks at sort of throwback to what Frederick did, where he kind of started before the actual race and met with the team and sort of spoke to them and watched their presentation. It's that kind of gradual build up to the big final at the end, which works really well.
Yeah, I think it's a more challenging event to do a big splash around when you think about it, because it happens every single year in the same place and they go every single year. So like with the Tour de France, they could put all their energy into one social media plan because it was a rare thing. I don't think the Tour de France has ever taken place in Denmark. I don't think a Danish person has won it before. So there was a lot of firsts, and it was, people got caught up in that excitement. It's kind of like the Olympics. Like you can dedicate more attention when the Olympics is happening in your country once, possibly for a whole generation, versus, you know, if it's something that happens every single year in your country. So they do have to be a bit more careful about like how they do communications around it. I would say one of the things I like about the way they about Wimbledon is it's one of the few areas where there is kind of consistency. We know that Kate's going to go to the two finals, and one of the other days, possibly a small during those days, she'll go to a smaller court, and we know that she's going to do something like either go and meet with the chefs at the in the kitchens, or go and meet with the ball boys and the ball girls, or go and meet with some of the younger players who are kind of like the stars of the future. You know, we know she's going to do something else around rather than just going and sitting and watching the tennis match. So it's like it's pretty consistent that we get that year on year. And in the world of the Cambridges, consistency in anything is rare. So
does not exist.
So I very much appreciate that when it comes to Wimbledon. They could do more. When Kate's finished talking to somebody, one of the comms staff could stay and have an interview with that person, or they could show photographs of the family watching from home like they did with the Tour de France, because we know that Kate goes to like 2 or 3 days, but we don't know what she, you know, she definitely watches all of the matches. So like we could see if she can't physically be there for a big match from a British player, for example, she could have her photograph taken of her and the kids watching it. Or talking about royal history, George VI competed at Wimbledon in the doubles. So, you know, they could do a similar, basically I'm just repeating what they did for the Tour de France because I really liked that. They could do that for Wimbledon. So there is room for more, but I think that, as I say, it is tricky because you can't do everything in 1 year and then you've got no communications plan for every other year that they go to Wimbledon. So I think considering that it's something that they know they're going to have to do every year, they still find ways to keep it dynamic. And obviously this year they brought George for the first time, which gave it another sort of new angle that we hadn't had before.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that it could get stale very quickly, because I mean it's near enough the same days of the year every year in the same place with very similar people. Like when the Duke and Duchess of Gloucester go, we don't tend to get a picture of them sat on the royal family Instagram account saying, oh, they've had a lovely day today at Wimbledon. It's more of a, oh, we've happened to spot them in the crowd kind of thing. And they definitely could make more of a sort of thing. Like every time someone goes, particularly if they go to the royal box, which is for them, you know, just post a picture saying today, it doesn't even have to be as an engagement in the court circular. It could just be a, today the Duke and Duchess of Gloucester watched this match at Wimbledon, hooray, and then it would feel a little bit more sort of intentional. Because Wimbledon is so open, we see them, and you see people like those royal adjacents, like we see the Middleton family there, and we'll see like Margaret's family there, and we'll see the really kind of like great grandnieces of the Queen there, and the really sort of far out on the balcony type people. But it feels like it's a family event, which I think works particularly well because the Queen herself isn't a tennis person. So she doesn't come rocking up. She's barely ever went to Wimbledon when she was the patron. So it feels more like, oh, it's a whole lovely family event rather than it's a one person show.
And then so our last topic that's kind of in the good category is very topical. It's the Commonwealth Games, which is kind of similar to the Olympics, but it takes place with just countries that are part of the Commonwealth.
Yeah, it's like a baby Olympics.
And it was taking place in Birmingham, which is in England. So obviously the royals had to kind of be in attendance. And the phrase that came to mind when I thought about the royals' approach to it this time is necessity is the mother of invention, which sounds very fancy. But what I mean by that is that the royals are thin on the ground. Because of that, they have had to make the choice that everybody does something. Everybody goes and watches a couple of things and then goes back home again. That necessity, the fact that they've had to do it that way because they just don't have anybody else and everybody's going to go on holiday, so they don't want their holidays to be interrupted by the Commonwealth Games, has actually led to it looking really good, unintentionally, I suspect, because they are all involved at different stages.
Yeah, and I mean, they really have just sort of dragged in every possible royal they can. Like, I'm pretty sure today, because it's Sunday when we record this, I'm pretty sure the Gloucesters are there. Like, that's the big royal today. The Gloucesters, and I love the Gloucesters. Actually, I don't know much about them, but they're great. But like, in you know, if we throw back to the 2012 Olympics, can you imagine there being a day where just the Gloucesters were in attendance? Like, there was like 8 royals everywhere, but like they are all going. I mean, you had sort of Charles doing the big opening as the sort of next head of the Commonwealth, which made perfect sense. That's his job. That was a perfect sort of handover. And then it's like, these two royals will be here on this day, and this royal will be here on this day, and these three on this day, and these two on this day, right till the end. And then they've all been there, and it feels like they've all gone, oh, we'll spread it out so everyone gets a little bit of royal sparkle. When in reality, I imagine someone sat down and was like, right, get me all the diaries. We're going to find some gaps and we're going to fill them in.
Who can do this one? We have no one who can go to watch the cycling. Like, yeah.
Call the Duke of Gloucester. He's coming in.
Yeah, I think it's still unfolding. Nothing particularly interesting has happened so far in the Commonwealth, I'm going to be honest.
People always compare particularly when the Commonwealth Games are in the UK, they're like, well, remember in 2012 and everyone was there? And I'm like, yeah, that was the Olympics. That's a bit different. We went all out. Like, everyone who was anyone was at the Olympics for as much as they possibly could be. Whereas when the Commonwealth Games were in Glasgow in 2014, it really was only Harry, William, Kate, Edward and Sophie. That was it. There's far more of them doing it now, even though it only feels like they're all doing one day each,
yeah,
than there was last time. So this is kind of a bonus.
The Olympics in the UK, 2012, before that it was 1948. So, you know, most of the people who were enjoying the Olympics in 2012 were not alive when the last Olympics happened. Whereas the Commonwealth Games last happened in the UK 8 years ago. So
I remember that one.
I was definitely, yeah, it was like, surprisingly enough, I was alive then. So yeah, it would be understandable if there was only a couple of royals who were in attendance, but you know, the way that it's worked out, they've got quite a lot of them.
For all the good the royals do around, but there's always the odd moment where they fail miserably. And this year that's taken the form of the Women's Euros, which is football. It's women's football. Helpfully, it's happening 1 year after the Men's Euros, which took place this time last year. So it's all happened very, very sort of close. So it's been very nice and simple and easy to compare how different royal families have approached them. And if we have a quick sort of flashback to the Men's Euros last year, we had William, who is the president of the FA, the Football Association, went to all of the matches for England from the last 16 onwards, so like their last 4 matches. We had Kate and George join him. We had members of the Danish royal family at some points. We had, I'm pretty sure we saw King Felipe at a couple of points. We had a big, massive royal attendance. And then the Women's Euros have been going on. It's the final today. It's the final in precisely 1 hour and 22 minutes, in fact. And so far, we've seen Princess Leonor and Infanta Sofia of Spain at one match, and that's it.
If you look at the countries in, because it's the Euros, if you look at the countries who have a monarchy, it's Norway, England, Spain, Denmark, Sweden, and the Netherlands. So basically all the big ones. You know, the only two that we've had attending were literal children. They live in Spain, a different country, which you have to fly to get from one place to another. And they did that. And no one else has been bothered to do that.
But yeah, it's been a very notable discrepancy compared to the sort of huge royal presence we had this time last year for the men's team.
Yeah, and I think most of the criticism that has happened so far has been directed towards William. And I'm not biased, but I'm going to explain why I think that is right. even though, like, some people will be like, oh, why is it just about William and why is it not about, like, Norway or Sweden or whatever else? And I think, firstly, it was overseas. And I know that 2 children obviously were able to fly over, so it wasn't impossible that other people could. But it is slightly different when it's taking place in your country versus when it's taking place in a different country, because you have to weigh up whether or not it's worth the flight over. I would say that other royal families have generally had, not all of them, but some of them have had a better record of paying attention to women's sports generally. So it doesn't feel like, you know, they just consistently miss out women's sports in the way that it does in the UK. I think there's, again, there's kind of a, you know, I think Denmark and Spain and the Netherlands perhaps were more invested in the men's game, but like I don't remember Sweden being particularly invested in the men's one. I don't know how well they did or if they were even in it, but they, I don't remember any sort of level of investment really. So I kind of feel like it's not as, you know, much of a discrepancy that they're not, if they're not posting about the Swedish women, it's probably because they weren't posting that much about the Swedish men either. But I think the biggest reason is that he is the chair of, or the president of the Football Association, which kind of manages all of this. And when it was the men's game, he was there from pretty much, as you know, what would you say, the last 16?
Last 16, yeah.
Last 16. He was there consistently from the last 16. Whereas it feels like with this situation, they got into the final and that was, or like the semi, and that was when he started paying attention. It wasn't as early, and theoretically, because he's the chair of the FA, which is both women's sports and men's football as well, you would have thought that the level of interest should have been the same. So that's my pitch as to why I do think it's bad that there's been a discrepancy in general, but I think it's worse for William, and I think the criticism is more justified with him because it is on a role that he voluntarily took on, and the tournament is happening in his country, and he has got a long record of not really paying attention to women's sports in the same way as he does to men's.
Yeah, I completely agree. I see a lot of criticism being like, oh, William doesn't care about women's sport, and I'm like, you know what, maybe he doesn't. I don't particularly care if William has any interest in women's football. I'm not a football person as such, but I don't necessarily think that just because you support a men's team, you have to support a women's team, or vice versa. Like, and William is a boy and he grew up playing boys' football, so of course that's where his interest would have come from. So that doesn't actually bother me at all. I don't care if he sat home and be like, God, I hate watching women's football, rubbish. But his job is president of the Football Association, not president of the Boys' Football Association. And when he took on that job, he had to, well, he should have had to, give the same sort of gravitas to both men's and women's football and to the sort of para football and wheelchair football and youth football, all of which are under his umbrella. And he only ever seems to do the men's team, like the men's national team. Whereas even when, if we think back to sort of January, February this year, when Kate became patron of the Rugby Football Union and the Rugby Football League, they explicitly mentioned the women's rugby and the para rugby, and during her engagements there were women there, there were people there who had disabilities. Like, it wasn't just she's going to go hang out with some male rugby players now. Like, I know it was only one event, and I'm going to hold her to this if she doesn't rock up at some women's rugby matches later on this year, but like, that one event was a big, everyone, we do all the rugby here. And I was so glad, because I was like, it was going to be really annoying if she just does some men when there's also women involved. I think it almost like it wouldn't have been so bad if we hadn't had this exact situation last year with the men and saw what he did. Because, you know, maybe he was on holiday for a week and couldn't go for an entire week, but he could have been sending, you know, those little personal tweets he 100% definitely writes himself from the first match. He could have even put this little W at the end. He could have, you know, taken a picture of the kids in a football kit. He could have turned up to one match at the beginning and one at the end.
Nobody forced him to be president of the FA. That is a role that he voluntarily took on. And I think this is actually quite a thing with him in the FA. He obviously wants to go and watch football. That's why he so took the job, because he likes watching football. But he's done a few things where he's like, he said, I can't remember whether it was, he said he was bored of racism or tired of racism. But he said that about in racism in football, because racism is a big problem in football, and hasn't done anything to address racism in football in the several years since he made that slightly ill-judged comment. He had like a mental health in football thing that happened for a while. Heads Up, I think it was called. That's kind of... Yeah. Disappeared. I don't know what's happening with that. Not much. He's generally quite flaky with the FA, so it just doesn't feel like he really is putting his energy into that role in the same way that he is for some of his other patronages and official roles and things.
In football, it's more sort of egregious, because historically, and this is historically up until, like, I don't know, like February this year, the gap in interest and in pay is so big. Like, there's all these articles about the England women's football team and their day jobs because they're like lawyers and they have cafes because they aren't paid enough to work. Whereas, you know, I don't know who's in the Wayne Rooney, is he still a footballer? Wayne Rooney gets enough money to, you know, in a week, he'll probably get more money in a week than these female footballers will earn in their entire lifetime doing two jobs. And, you know, there was a match really early in this where the England women's team won, I don't know what it was, like 7-0 or something. Because I was thinking, if it was a friendly match between the England's men team and some other team, I don't know, Norway, so we say, if it was a friendly and England's men had won 8-0, William would have been tweeting his own personal message afterwards, be like, so proud of you boys, you do so well, you inspire us every day, you know, in a friendly. And this was the opening rounds of a competition held in his own country, of which the whole, he is their president, essentially. And he didn't even give him a tweet, didn't even give him a retweet. Like, it's not hard to retweet things. I can retweet things all the time. And I know he doesn't personally retweet them, but he could have told someone to say, look, at the end of every football match, just do a little retweet. It will look really good.
And I think like today we got a video of William and Charlotte, which I think is interesting.
I have another bone with that.
So we got a photograph of William and Charlotte, a video of William and Charlotte of them sort of saying good luck and we're all behind you kind of thing. Very sweet to see Charlotte. But like this was for the final and it definitely felt like they got criticized and realized they had to do something rather than it being like, yeah, something that like the Tour de France we mentioned earlier, that they'd thought of before the event even kicked off, that like, oh, this is happening. They knew in advance the dates that it was happening. They knew England would be in it. So why, you know, they shouldn't have had to just be a scramble at the last minute to do something.
And this video has gone down so well, like with it's all the royal sort of British royal accounts have posted it. I watched like the BBC Breakfast Twitter account post it, you know, like everyone's like, oh, isn't that lovely? Look at Charlotte. Isn't she happy about it? You know, if they'd done that from the first match, even if he didn't do anything else, it would have been like, oh, at least he was sending them good luck messages at the beginning. You know, it would have felt more cohesive. It would have felt more like they cared.
A good luck message that he had to do something for, like to video him and Charlotte, they have to sit there and be videoed. He doesn't write these tweets. So that's another problem. But anyway, carry on. Sorry, I interrupted you.
And my other thing, and this is less of a criticism of William and just of the world in general, there's been real sort of send William and Charlotte to the final of the FA. And I just, everyone's always, and I get it, because William himself has spoken about how much Charlotte loves football. Apparently she plays in goal. We've seen her kicking footballs. But from what we know, she doesn't have the kind of passion for football that George has. And why is it that George gets to go to the boys' games and Charlotte has to go to the girls' games? Like, why not? If we want William to take the children, why doesn't he take George and Charlotte or just George and show that, you know, women's football is for everyone, not just for girls? Like,
100%. I agree with you completely. If her level of interest is that high, why not take her to all of the matches? And if it's not that high and George's is higher, take him to the women's match, if you know, or involve him in saying good luck to them as well, because yeah, it does make it just a very gendered thing. And it's not even so much, you know, to William and Kate, it might have just been like Charlotte's really got involved in the football team this year, she really likes watching them, so let's put her in the video. They might not have had any, it might just have been completely natural and normal to them that they would have included Charlotte because she was more interested in this than George was, maybe. But it's the commentary around it that I'm seeing from other people that bothers me. And that's what this whole thing is about, that, you know, William isn't putting the same energy into the women's team as he is into the men's team. And where do we think that mindset starts? It's with people who are saying, well, why isn't Charlotte going to this? Or, what, you know, they should take Charlotte because she's a girl. That's it.
I mean, the Euros are essentially over, the finals today. But I think the backlash has been bigger this time than I think for any other time he's missed women's events. So I will be particularly sort of notable, or it will be notable what he does in the future, you know, because he doesn't, you know, fly out for every World Cup final or every World Cup match for the men. But I imagine if the men got to a World Cup final, he would. So if the women get to a World Cup final, I'd expect to see the same level of engagement. And I think it'll be really interesting to see if that happens or whether it's just because it's not in the England anymore, it kind of just sort of disappears under the carpet a bit.
We've spoken here about several examples of royals and their kind of sporting connection through their job, but they also take part in many sporting events.
When I Googled this and I was Googling royals who do sport, the one that came up first every time is Princess Anne. And I think that is more to do with who she is and when she did her sport than actually her sporting ability, because she isn't the best sports person on this list by quite a way. So whether you're looking at people who've actually won Olympic medals, you've got her ex-husband, who's got two. Zara's got one. Inaki, who is Infanta Cristina's now ex-husband, has got two. Even people like King Harold's dad has a gold medal at the Olympics. You know, the old King Olaf of...
Norway.
I was like, I was going to say Spain, and I was like, that's not right. King Constantine of Greece has got a gold medal. So there's so many of them who've got actual medals. And then if you go and look at world championships, I mean, King Harold's got loads of sailing gold and silver medals. You've got Princess Ingrid Alexandra's got a gold medal in surfing at sort of at a Norwegian level, but it's becoming international. You've got loads of them who, I mean, Princess Charlene's got a silver medal at the Commonwealth Games, which I found really hilarious because I kind of forgot that she's South African. Like, I know it, but when I realized she was in the Commonwealth Games, I was like, oh yes, her queen used to be my queen.
Yeah.
And now, and then I think you've got the ones who don't tend to go for the kind of, they don't take it as the career, but they've got that really innate talent. And I think, you know, looking at like, Frederick is so sporty. Like, he runs marathons, he does Ironmans, which are like mega marathons, he does loads of sailing. I was reading an interview with him where he was talking about that when he met Mary at an Olympics, it was the 2000 Olympics, which was when like 1,000 royals were there competing. If you just look at the date, they were all doing something in the 2000 at the 2000 Sydney Olympics. But at that point, Frederick was thinking about going in as a competitive sailor, as an Olympian. And then met Mary and was like, nope, I'm in love. And I just think that there's this kind of, a lot of them have got this really innate talent that doesn't necessarily, they haven't gone on and done a career in it, but you've got your professionals and then you've got your people who are the same level. Like polo, I don't think it's necessarily a real sport. It's just something I've seen royals do. However, when I was doing my research on polo last night, Charles is like, well, was back when he played polo, like one of the best polo players in the world. Like, he was top 10 in Britain and he was playing at a professional level just because he was the future king. That was it. And Philip, they said, was a similar level to him, whereas Harry and William are very good amateurs, but Charles and Philip were like professionals, but they couldn't do any professional stuff because of who they were.
That is the most British way of criticizing somebody, to be like, oh, I mean, they were professional level, but you are very good amateurs.
I was googling it and I was like, what makes someone a professional polo player? And then I was like,
shame.
This is not it. It's Harry and William are very good, but they're not professionals. I'm like, I'm gonna become like a Charles polo fan at this rate. I was like, he's so good at polo.
Yeah, I mean, I think you made an interesting point earlier a minute ago about like the fact that there are really good royals, definitely, who probably would have, if they'd been somebody else, might have got a lot of sponsorship deals and all sorts of stuff. But there is an element of it being like, they get so much attention because of who they are. And like, I think Felipe did, he was the flag bearer when he was in the Olympics for the Spanish contingent. And I don't know if he would have got that job if he wasn't the future king.
Yeah, and I think when I was sort of searching through some of the royals in my head who were really big sports people, like Felipe, I was like, well, yeah, Felipe was in the Olympics. He's very sporty. And it's like, he came sixth at one Olympics.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Harold has not personally won any Olympic medals, but he's been in multiple Olympics and won loads of world championships, whereas he wasn't sort of... So I don't think of Harold when I think of the sporty royals, and I possibly because sailing is, you know, sitting down. not the horse racing isn't, but I I don't think of him in the same way that I might think of Frederick or even someone like Daniel, who isn't a professional but was a personal trainer, so had that a sporting career before he started. And then I was finding it really hilarious because the sort of more Googling I was doing, I was getting down to the really nitty gritty, and I found out that Albert has a judo black belt, and I just can't get that off my head.
Oh, I'd love to see him in his little outfit.
I was like, does he still do it? Does he practice? I just need to know everything about this possible.
Yeah, does he have do they have a dojo in judo? I don't know if that's karate, but whatever they go to, does he have a judo class in Monaco that's like just him, or does he join a local class?
There can't be many judo classes in Monaco.
No. I mean, he doesn't. It always surprises me that he's an Olympian. It always surprises me that he did bobsleigh as well. Like, how did that happen?
Like, it was pre becoming head of state, Albert. And I just imagine, like, you go to join up to your local bobsleigh team, and then, like, the future head of state, son of Grace Kelly, is there, like, yeah, I'm going to be in your team as well.
Where did he develop the interest in bobsleigh? Like, I understand why kids who play football at a young age want to be footballers, but what child is, like, exposed to bobsleighing and is like, this is the sport for me, I'm going to dedicate my life to bobsleigh? Like, not to disparage bobsleighers, because I'm sure it looks really cool, but I just don't understand where that kind of interest came from, that was the sport that he was going to commit to for the Olympics. And, you know, like, how many people in Monaco are part of are bobsleighers? Like, in the first place, what was the standard for him to get on the team?
Did Monaco make it to 5 bobsleigh Olympics in a row? Like,
you would have thought that maybe they would have got enough people to do a tennis tournament or something. That seems like Monaco. But for there to be so much interest in Monaco that they can form multiple teams to do bobsleigh, it's just very strange.
There are some royal families that you associate with sports. And, you know, like, I associate the British royal family quite heavily with sports, and the Swedish royal family quite heavily with sports. And really, they're not very sporty. Like, the most sort of traditionally sporty person I could find in a royal family was Mike Tyndall, because he was a rugby player, but he did that before he was in the royal family. Like Iñaki, when he did his handball, his first sort of gold medal at the Olympic, or medal at the Olympics, I'm pretty sure, was before he married in. There seems to be, like, the strain of royals who do sport and are really, really good at it, royals who do sport and aren't quite as good but still make it to the Olympics, and then the Olympians who become royalty and then are like, yeah, I'm done now, I've achieved everything in this life.
I found it very interesting. So I don't know, this is very rough statistics and it's not statistically accurate at all, but in the British royal family, if we just look at the Queen's descendants, I think about 8% of them were Olympians, whereas if you look at the general population, it's like less than 0.001% of the population will be an Olympian. And so that's not accurate statistics at all, because not comparing the exact same thing. But I think it's, you know, it's indicative of the fact that there is a discrepancy, even if they're not doing that well and they never get a medal when they go, there is a discrepancy between the level of the number of Olympians who are royal versus in the general population.
Like, there are so many from all the different royal families as well that are in there who make it to the Olympics but then don't win the medals. And I'm looking at you, Spain. But it's just, it's notable how many of them there are who came like 12th in the Olympics.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, you've kind of picked up on the fact that most of them, there is a disparity between like the ones who married in and the ones who were born royals. And if you look at the ones who are married in, you have more variation. So you have Iñaki and his handball. Don't know what that is, but who did it? I'm gonna guess it's football with hands. Charlene was a swimmer. We have Mike Tyndall, who was kind of a professional rugby player. So there's a bit more variation in terms of the sports that they participated in versus the royals themselves. The vast majority are sailing or horse riding.
Yeah. The only person who I could find who had a medal, like at an international level, that wasn't sailing or horse riding was Princess Ingrid Alexandra's surfing medal. Like, and surfing is apparently very big in Norway, which I've only learned recently because I didn't even know Norway had a coast.
Oh my goodness.
I assumed it was A, landlocked, and B, too cold to surf. I thought they just did surfing in Australia. But so you learn something new every day. But yeah, apart from that, they're all doing sailing, or they're all doing horse riding, which are rich people sports.
100%. And I think that's possibly why there is this discrepancy. It sounds quite obvious to just be like, it's money. But, you know,
it is.
If I think a sport like football, all you need is a football and you can play it. And so it's a bit more egalitarian. Like, there are so many stories of, I know that these are quite manipulated, but there are so many stories of people who came from very difficult backgrounds of sort of poverty and exclusion, who became globally famous footballers, who are extremely talented because they had somebody recognized it and nurtured it in them. Whereas with the Royals, they tend to participate in sports where you require a huge amount of equipment, so a boat or a horse, both very expensive things to have. Even to rent, they're expensive. You can't do them just like in the streets. If you grow up in the middle of a city, you can't horse ride or sail. You have to be able to physically travel to go to the coast to be on your boat, or to go to a paddock and see horses, or whatever they call the place where horses live. I don't know. Stables. You have to go to a stable and see the horses. That's it. If they were completely untalented, they wouldn't have got access. You know, they wouldn't have got onto the team at all. But it is notable, I think, that so many of them have gravitated towards these particular sports, even across different families, different cultures, different climates, and, you know, different focuses, like the level of sailing will be popularity will be different in different countries. And yet they still gravitate towards these, what are in the UK, at least, very middle class sports that require a lot of an additional level of income to be able to take part in.
When you look at the people, say like the British team for equestrian, they tend to be like Lady Charlotte Poppington and Sir Kenneth and Jasper, and they're posh people, and they are. And you look back at them and they will, like, they're not the type of people to be like, oh, I grew up in a, you know, I went to a comprehensive school and I lived on a really rough estate. Like, they will accept the fact that they have grown up in an upper middle class family and they are descended from aristocracy, and they are very, very lucky to be where they are, and they know that in a way that royals don't necessarily tend to confess that they are very, very lucky to be where they are. It's so interesting that if you think about, I don't know, say the Great Britain, who compete as a country in the Olympics, if you think about the amount of them who have access to a horse ever, and then of those people, the amount of people who have access to a horse enough to learn to ride, and then the amount of people who have enough access and money to a horse to be able to train that horse to be a competitive level while also training themselves to be a competitive level, like, there's not really that much of a surprise that quite a few members of the same family get in there, because, like, I don't think I know anyone who can afford a horse. I don't blame them. I don't
know. No. Like,
Princess Anne, it's all her fault. Like, it's not her fault that she was the daughter of the Queen of England and, you know, Great Britain, and could do that. But if her passion had been, rather than horse racing, if it had been swimming, I can swim in a river or the sea or a swimming pool, which, you know, used to be quite cheap to go to. So I could have trained myself and gone to schools where I did swimming lessons and got trained up to be a really good swimmer, in the same way that I never had the opportunity to do as a horse rider. So if their passions had been in a more sort of commonplace sport, maybe they wouldn't have been able to sort of rise through the ranks as quickly as they did.
And these are not sports that kind of the general public or the government invest a ton of money in training people up in either. Like, cycling we did really well at in the last Olympics, I remember, and I've always done quite well in the Olympics for the cycling, because they invested a huge amount of money in it and it became very popular. And so they then invested even more money in it. Whereas, like, I don't think there's a huge number of grants available to people who want to be professionals in dressage, you know, in the same way that there is if you wanted to be a cyclist. There's just different national priorities. So again, like, I'm not trying to devalue the achievements of anybody who's gone to the Olympics, because, as I say, I don't even know if I can run at all, like, let alone, you know, but I think it is just interesting.
I think the sailing one really interested me. Like, if we look, the British ones are just entirely horses, apart from Mike and, like, King George VI, who got knocked out in the first round of Wimbledon. Like, they're all horses, but if you go to the other royal families, they're predominantly sailing. I know horse riding is dangerous. I know there's the risk of, you know, being killed by a horse, but I feel like there's more of a risk of drowning at sea. So it has that kind of element of danger, but probably in a very safe way that royals don't get very much.
Yeah.
Like, your likelihood of dying playing tennis is very, very small. Like, I did a lot of Googling of how many people have died at Wimbledon.
Why did you Google that?
I just wanted to know if anyone, like, collapsed in the middle of a tennis match and died. And I was like, it's normally, like, someone in the crowd had, like, a heart attack or a ball boy got, like, hit in the head and 2 days later died of concussion.
Gosh.
But I'm sure if I Google people dying in boat accidents, it's a much higher number. But also, that clearly kept very safe. Like, no one's just sent Felipe off to sea and gone, like, good luck when he was 10 years old. But it probably, in a weird way, and horse riding as well, they've both probably got that kind of very safe element of danger in a way that someone growing up royal isn't going to get very often, because everything they do is protected to keep them safe because their job is living, essentially.
I suppose all royals reach a level of their career where they can't go any further if they're a working royal. Because if you look at Zara, she's taken on sponsorships from private companies, and she's allowed to do that because she's not a working royal. She doesn't receive any taxpayer funds. Princess Anne could only really go so far in her career before she would have had to firstly dedicate more time to it, but secondly start taking on sponsorships. And so I think they get to a point where they can't really do any more. I think one of the reasons they're so keen to be involved in things like the Olympics is because it occupies a similar space to the military, which royals are very heavily connected to in pretty much every country, in that it's not, I'm not going to say sport is apolitical at all, but the royals can kind of act like it is, and you hear them a lot talking about it in the same way that they talk about the military as being like the great leveler of, like, sport only cares about whether or not you're good at it and whether or not you're putting in the effort and whether or not you're putting in the time. And obviously, as we've talked about, that is total rubbish. A lot of it depends on the level of access you have and the networks you have and the money that you have to be able to dedicate to it. But I think it occupies the same space in that to them, it feels like it's something that they achieved. And it's the same in the military. Like, we know for a fact that royals like Harry and William have been treated differently than other soldiers because of who they are. And sometimes that's been, you know, it meant that William hasn't been able to go overseas in a way that other soldiers might have. For Harry, it meant that he got access to Sandhurst when he was not qualified to be in Sandhurst at all. So, you know, we know that they get different treatment in the military, and I think it offers, but they feel like, oh, I was just another guy in the mess. Nobody treated me differently. I got a nickname like everyone else. And so it's totally artificial. But to them, I think that they might feel like this is a way to serve their country that is not based on who they are and is just based on, you know, sport and their love of the sport, which anybody can have. And, you know, that kind of mental fairy tale they can kind of tell themselves.
Yeah, it's like, they're not being treated normally because, like what you mentioned, Felipe carrying the flag for Spain, like a random member of the sailing team who at that point hadn't won any major championships or medals and to this day still hasn't in any other country is not going to be your flag bearer at the Olympics. But when that person is also the future king, of course they're going to be your flag bearer. Like, why wouldn't they be? Like, it makes a lot of sense. But they must feel like when you're training, you have to train. You know, if you are in that moment, if you've got in your boat with your crew, you all have to put in the same amount of work. Like, at a point, you're going to get kicked out if you're not doing it. So while you're in that sort of moment, it's that equalization that they will never get anywhere else in their life because of what they were sort of born into or married into. And I also think that it's one of the few careers they can go into that doesn't have the risk of, which doesn't sort of come with the same risks as a sort of career where you can make money off who you are.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm like Zara, being a non-working royal, has got sponsorships. And some of those sponsorships will be because Zara the is a very good equestrian. And some of them will be because she is Zara Tyndall, daughter of Princess Anne, granddaughter of the Queen. And she's probably very aware of that. And that's fine because she has never received any taxpayer money. Whereas, like you mentioned, Princess Anne, after a point, she couldn't go on and get any more sponsorships. We mentioned Prince Charles and Polo. Like, he couldn't play professionally because of who he was and everything that would have gone with it, all the kind of the places he would have had to play, the sponsorships he would have had to take. Like, he couldn't do it, so he couldn't carry on. And I think that's probably why they go to these sports where it's fine, rather than, you know, George isn't going to grow up and become a professional footballer who plays for Arsenal, because what if Arsenal gets sponsored by, I don't know, Republic? Like, it couldn't happen. So these sort of safe careers have a lot less risk attached to them.
Yeah, and like contracts and things, even just that, like if you're going to a football club, you might sign a deal that you're going to be with them for 5 years or something. And what if the Queen drops dead and you've got to step up? Like, I'm sure they'll find a way to get you out of it, because you're the, you know, if you're the new monarch. But it does just feel a bit safer to be like, oh well, I'm just going to go on a boat for a bit. And I think it, you know, it's interesting, like Peter Phillips, Princess Anne's son, he does a lot of things. I don't really know what he's doing at the moment. But one of the things that he did at some point in his career was he kind of liaised, or was the facilitator between corporate companies and sports people, and helped sports people to get sponsorship. And I think actually got Zara some of her sponsorship. She was his client. And he's been criticized for that, and for his sort of personal business activities, more than Zara has for having the sponsorships herself. And I think that is because there's this certain element of like, well, she's earned it as well. There's like an age limit on most sports. Most people can't, you know, Princess Anne is probably still very good at riding a horse, but I don't think she would claim she could be in the Olympic team today. So it's also kind of falls with, it just perfectly aligns with the time in their life where they do have the more freedom to do that.
Like you said, it's almost like a good PR thing to go to an Olympics, even if you're rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
Because for the rest of your life, people are like, oh, remember when Princess Anne worked really, really hard and she did all that horse riding and got herself to the... I mean, you don't see them all... You didn't see Charles do that, did you? Like, it's a positive thing that she's always going to have. Culturally, we view sport in a very positive light. And I imagine, based on the fact that royals are invested in it in most of these other countries, they do in, you know, Monaco and in, you know, like the Monaco... Even things like the Grand Prix and, you know, big competitions that take place in these different countries... They're viewed so well, like it's such an easy PR win for the rest of your life if you get involved in it. Like, if I was a royal, I'm not sporty at all, but I'd find some minor league sport that I was going to just pretend to be good at. And I would like rock up every now and then to their tournaments and cheer them on. Everyone would be like, oh, isn't she really invested in archery in the UK? Like, and I'd be like, yeah, that's me. I'm the archery person. And I would run on that PR for the rest of my life, because people would be like, even though I wasn't doing anything, it would have this kind of like, oh, she's putting the effort in to go and watch other people do archery. Like, it's people just have nice thoughts around these things.
I just got slightly distracted at the end because I was trying to think of different sports that I could take part in. and I was like, I don't think that they do falconry at the Olympics. So I don't think that's, I don't think that works. And I need to find a falcon. I don't know where they live. I don't know where the falcons live. So I know. I'm trying to think of other minor sports that I could do, but I don't know why falconry was the first thing that came to me. Jousting.
Yeah, jousting. Why don't more royals take up jousting these days?
The long family history of jousting. So thank you so much for joining us. And I cannot believe that I made it through an hour of talking about sports. I think I deserve a medal for that. That's a sport in itself. but thank you for joining us. You can go back and listen to any of our previous episodes. We are on all good podcast providers. And we hope that you join us again next week. But beyond that, it is a goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.